Welcome to The Atypical Leader with Rick Brennan, where we talk about harnessing what makes you unique
and maybe even a little odd,
while at the same time dismantling the notion that you have to be a certain type of person or act a certain way to be an effective leader.
You're definitely a leader, not a follower.
I like the sound of this.
It's time for us atypical leaders to come out of the shadows and learn to be proud and confident in what makes us different.
I'm proud of who I am.
I'm proud of who I am.
Atypical Leader starts now.
Good morning, Judy.
Morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I hear you had a little accident the other day in cold, snowy Calgary.
I did. Yeah. The old brain just wasn't working.
What happened?
Didn't turn. I was driving out of an acreage, and it was really, really snowy. There was about 20 centimeters of snow, and instead of turning a sharp right, I kind of turned a far right and went right down into the ditch.
Oh, and so how'd you get out?
Joyce and I and Amber, the woman that owns the acreage, we dug ourselves out. and then I just backed her up and went right up the hill and onto the road. Thank God for Subarus.
Well, absolutely. We love our Subarus. We've had many. Yeah. Well, that's not performance. But that's life in the snowy north, right? The big white north.
Yep. The first time I've ever done it. Be the last.
Really? That's the first time you've ever done that?
Yeah, first time I've ever gotten stuck like that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you've been lucky then.
But yeah. But I really buggered up my shoulder bad, so.
Oh, well. Yeah. Okay.
No, well, so life goes on.
Let's carry on here.
Okay. So what are we talking about today, sir?
Well, I think we're going to talk about high-performance teams.
And oh.
Yeah. I mean, I know, as you know, you'd lined up a podcast that I went on, a video podcast with Claire, right?
Yeah, Claire Kuhman. It's called Happy Spaces.
Happy Spaces, yeah. And so we had a conversation. She deals with people with different types of sensitivities and that, all of course, are neurodiverse in some way.
Right,
and, yeah. And so we talked about that and sort of my perspective on that and performance and a little bit on high-performance teams. So I thought, geez, we should probably have a podcast about that.
How do you get it? What does it look like? Like, I never worked in teams like you did. So I'm not, you know, the concept is a bit foreign to me. I mean, I've learned a lot over the podcast. Yeah. But what does a high-performance team really look like?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question because you can be on a good team. You can be on a great team, which really doesn't make it a high-performance team, okay? So let me cover that. So basically, you can get a team, and people have goals and objectives, and they reach their goals and objectives. So they reach their budget numbers and so on and so forth.
Right.
I mean, you're a functional team. I think what a high-performance team is that you really have the capability of achieving the impossible.
Okay.
That your vision is creative, it's out there, it's aggressive, it's you take great joy in sort of overdoing things, over accomplishing things, and fun and work really coexist in that environment where you love to come to work. It's a happy place, it's an exciting place, it's a place that makes you feel good and empowered. When you get into the details, I think the leader means a lot in a high-performance team. And I would say that a leader is essential to creating a high-performance team because they have to create the environment. They have to create the flexibility, the attitude, and so on and so forth, and get everybody pointed in the same direction, which is obviously critical. You know, it's like anything. If you get 100 people enthusiastically organized, heading in the right direction with great clarity, I mean, just think what you can accomplish.
So how do you create that team? Like, how does the leader go about creating not just a great team, but a what you're calling a high performance team?
Well, I think that it starts with, in the teams that I've had, and we'll get into some couple examples of what I consider high performance teams and back that up with the type of performance that we have. But I mean, I think one thing is that family feeling. And what I mean by that is, Judy, you and I argue all the time. But at the end of at the end of the day, we still love and respect each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing is that you've got to speak your mind. Imagine sitting around a table and you have this feeling, you have this success, and you have this concern, but you're afraid to speak up.
Oh, Been in a million meetings like that.
Right. Well, just let common sense tell you. Well, if that's the case, can you really be a high-performance team? Because remember, are the 100 people heading in the same direction? If 66 of them want to say something but afraid to say it.
Right, yeah.
Because okay. And then the leader has to create the environment where people are listening to.
Yeah, so they have to listen and they have to, but they also have to feel that they can speak up. Okay.
Right, exactly. Kind of and when I say you. Speak up, okay. I mean sometimes I've been in down, out, dirty, well, not over the top, not abusive or not anything like that, but very, very frank conversations. Like, you're full of shit. Right.
And yes, I gotta tell you, had those.
Yeah, and I've had people, you know, from other groups, you know, people come and they attend meetings, and sometimes we would break out and they'd look at us like, oh my God, I'm not sure they even like each other.
Right.
But they didn't get the family thing. They didn't get that we had developed such a level of trust with each other that we could talk straight. And you got to talk straight to get to the bottom of things. If you're all concerned about everything you say, every word you use, every expression you do, you really can't get to the bottom of things. And clarity is essential to high-performance teams.
Okay, that makes sense.
Sense? So if I continue on, then accountability really ties into that. And I got to laugh because a lot of time, I mean, I hold my people accountable. And I expect them to hold me accountable. And that's that straight talk, okay? So it goes both ways. But other people and other executives go, oh, my God, Rick, don't people resent being so accountable? And that's where they don't get it. Being accountable, knowing exactly what people expect of you, it's like liberating. No surprises.
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
Exactly. So people tend to look at it the wrong way. And if you've got that trust behind you, you know, you're having real discussions, you've got that trust, you've got that family feeling – okay, I did what you expected of me, nailed it, raw, you're happy, I'm happy, and everyone around you is happy because they're accountable at the same level. And you know what it also drives is equity among employees because we've all experienced it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Susie's only capable of so much.
Yeah, so we'll let her slide.
We'll let her slide. Now, I get it, not everyone's going to be a rock star. That's fair.
Right.
But there is a level of performance that everyone has to be at. If you can't do as much as someone else, but you can still be accountable what you can get accomplished.
Right. Yeah. And you also, at one point in the podcast, you were talking about, you know, people were doing different scoring on people.
What I did is I created this, what I called the bar.
Right.
And the bar is normal, appropriate accountabilities. Okay.
That's it.
Above the bar. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're superstars. Maybe those people that are going to get promoted because they're above the bar. They're driving performance. They're doing more than everybody. Their attitude's great and all this stuff. So the bar is fine. But below the bar, that's where it becomes equitable, that there's a standard level of performance that's got to be expected from everybody because that's only fair to your teammates. So if you're below the bar, then we kick in, okay, do you understand your job? Do you need to be retrained in your job? Do you need to be all those other things? And we'll do all those things. But at the end of the day, if you can't get up to the bar, then you just might be in the wrong job.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about. Yeah. So you do that. Okay. Give me an example of a high performance team. Like, how would that work differently than a good team?
Before we do that, could I just go over a couple things? Because as we're talking, a couple of examples are coming up. And,
of course.
One thing is how people view things. Because everybody, and we know, we always talk about the atypical executive and the typical executive. And, you know, I can remember when I was in Atlanta, Canada. And, you know, I believe as I look back now, they were very much high-performance teams. But I don't know that I even knew that. Because I'd always been in that environment. I really didn't have anything else to compare to.
Okay. So you're saying you were always able to bring your teams up to that level without even knowing that they were at that level.
Right. Well, because we always operated under the same philosophy, always had the same relationships and so on and so forth. You know, we're nailing our numbers. I mean, you know, we're, you know, every year we're like the top in the country. We're like small distribution region within a major, major company, but we're still top of the line numbers. We're bringing in everything. Everything's on every year. Our customer satisfaction numbers are fantastic. Our employee engagement numbers are fantastic. And the comments that we would get from the typical executive out of Montreal and Toronto would be, Well, isn't it nice to have such easy employees to deal with? to have unions that are just so easy to get along with.
Yeah, you must be so lucky.
You must be so. And they just didn't understand that that's almost a reflection of a high-performance team that you don't even notice, because what we're doing, we make look easy. We're not working our nose to the grindstone. We're not – not that we're not working hard, but it's not about that. It's about good, common sense, appropriate actions at the right time, and all the things we've already talked about. And that's the key. It's like the duck who's floating along the pond, and you don't see his feet. They're really moving below the surface, and he's smooth.
Great analogy.
And you just don't.
Right.
So let's go back then to that, what your question was, about creating high-performance teams. Well, I think that first let me say, here's how you don't create one.
Okay.
If your organization, if your team is all about rules and conformity, mm-hmm. you will never be a high-performance team.
No, I can see that.
Now, for the naysayers, no one's saying not to have a rule around expenses and not to have this. We're not talking that. But you know those environments. That if there is, listen, if we haven't created a new rule by noon, well, we got to get at it, because you got the rules, 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 you know? And then the problem with conformity is usually to the lowest common denominator. This happened over here, so we need to put something in place that makes sure that everybody does it the same way. Well, that's usually to the lowest. It's not certainly pointing at the highest standard, because no one could really reasonably expect people to reach that, right?
Okay.
And how does that
allow? That makes sense.
Right. So you need a sort of perspective as a company, perspective as a leader, to be able to trust your employees, to allow them to be creative. And if you want that to happen, well, they can't be bound by rules.
No, but you have a framework for them, of course. That's what you're saying. You have a framework, but it's not laden down with rules all the time, right?
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because I think there's different pieces of that. One is the framework around you as an employee and their relationship with the team.
Okay.
Trustworthy, have strong moral character, are honest and straightforward. Those are the things I would take attitude over talent 10 out of 10 times. I can always go find that expert to build me a spreadsheet or to do these type of things or do whatever. But attitude, because attitude then brings your partner, brings the people that you're working with up to another level. And to, you know, then you're at one level and you go to another level and you go to another level, be all around attitude, having fun, enjoying your workplace, feeling, and we've talked about this so many times on other podcasts, is when the brain is relaxed, you know, when you feel comfortable, it's another universe.
No, it's funny because when I was in the comedy business, I used to always say, you know, I'll take someone that is slightly less funny than the funnier guy. If the funnier guy is the pain in the ass and the less, just, you know, I mean, not that he's not funny, but that he gets along with everybody. He's easy to work with.
Oh,
because it just makes the whole experience so much better than having the prima donna.
Yeah, no doubt. You know? No doubt about it. And, you know, I could go to sports when I coached. If I could have only picked by the parent, you know, if I could have said,
No,
I don't want that parent on my team. I would have had better and stronger teams, because when you're in age group type of competitions, the parents, like it or not, have a big impact. Now, of course, you weren't allowed to do that, right?
No, of course,
But there's no doubt that it was always the parents that were the issue, right?
Yeah. So it's the attitude, like you said. You take someone, good attitude makes such a difference in a workplace.
Oh, it really does. And, you know, getting to that thing where fun and hard work coexist, where it's the same thing. I don't notice I'm working hard. I don't notice that I'm doing these things, because I'm backed up. I have confidence. I'm relaxed. I'm in a trusting environment. So that just has me talking. Well, you can get the feeling why you'd be a high-performance team.
Oh, of course. Yeah. You're so relaxed. And you don't even realize that you're working that hard, because you're just in the groove. You're just doing it.
You're just doing it. You love your teammates. You know what you're accountable for. You know what they're accountable for. And then the other thing, too, that I've talked about the parents on teams, but one thing I really would do where I could control my employees is I would cut disruptors out of teams. If there's people on my team that are simply do not have the same values, the same agendas, the same operating style, or can't seem to conform to that, well, frankly, they got to go.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
You know, and that's some tough 100%. Decisions at times, because you could be talking about the talented one.
But as we just said, sometimes you take the less.
So one example of a high performance team that I would have was my Atlanta group back in McKesson. I mean, our numbers were always great. You know, okay. We had the best ops numbers, engagement numbers, customer numbers. We did a lot of things, like we brought the Sobeys relationship back from the dead, and you know, we accomplished a lot. But I don't even know at the time that we knew we were this high performance team. But in reflection, I think the thing that helped us be such a strong team, besides having the same values and approach to work and, you know, that sort of mm-hmm. thing, was really because we were isolated from the other groups. We weren't, you know, Toronto, Montreal were, you know, whatever, hundreds and hundreds of miles away. We didn't frequently see the executives. When we did, it was kind of a more of a come and say hello and leave. They weren't really involved in the business. And it allowed us to develop our own unique culture, to stick to the way that we saw things. And it led a long way to creating now that I know was a high performance team, because we just nailed everything all the time. And it was easy.
Right. Right. Well, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I was in the West and the head office was in Toronto, and we just were cooking. You know, our numbers were the highest in the country. We always were. Yeah, it was just great. And then there came a time where I went into the Toronto office to try and kind of replicate what we were doing out West, to see if we could help bring up the numbers out East, and couldn't do it. Just couldn't do it, because the atmosphere was so different. The CEO was there. The president was there.
All sticking their nose in. Yeah.
Yeah. They wanted me to achieve it, but they wouldn't let me achieve it.
Yeah.
You know, they just couldn't let me do what I needed to do to get that happening. And because it was it's a toxic atmosphere, I couldn't get the staff, the team that was out there to come on board. Everybody just did what they wanted to do, and they were so afraid of what was going to happen to them if they did anything. I gave up. I resigned and went back to
the West.
Well,
the thing is, too, is remember that when you went there, they were in that culture.
Yes, right? Exactly.
So even though, you failed before you started, because the table was set for that, right?
Exactly. I was actually told by the CEO that I was set up to fail in some ways.
Okay. Well, I can tell you on a positive note, you know, certainly I've had a couple of examples where really highlighted the power of the way we did things that really did create that high performance team. The first would be the IDSC model, which was that integrated supply chain model through all the New Brunswick hospitals, you know, multiple hospitals in two regions across the province with 10,000 nurses with advanced dispensing units, central fill, pharmacy, just on and on, all the software and pricing and stuff.
Yeah.
And we didn't know anything about it when we started.
Oh, my God. I mean, I've heard you talk about it for months now. I still don't know if I really get it.
No, it was complex. It was complex, but the team. So, you know, we just brought the team in. We, you know, again, we established accountabilities, who did and what. Of course, we went and got the expert to help us out, to put mm-hmm. those in the right direction and that sort of stuff. And we really would achieve the impossible. Now, it took a long time. It took a lot of patience. There were a lot of learning that happened over the process, a lot of relationships that were built. But nonetheless, after the 5 years, we would create something that did not exist in the world anywhere. And frankly, most people thought that it couldn't be done. And then the problem is getting different regions and hospitals and CEOs and government and finance and all these groups to agree and mm-hmm. sign off on a piece of paper was really the hardest part.
Must have been like herding squirrels.
Oh, herding squirrels. Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Drunk little squirrels. Yeah, no. You know, so that was one example. And really the team, it went on to implement it flawlessly, to you know, and to satisfy those nurses. And remember, we changed the culture. They changed pretty much the biggest part of how they worked in the hospital. So imagine that, you know, while they were disgruntled with government and pay raises and all that sort of stuff. But the next thing I would have was, so that's an example of sort of achieving something that no one ever thought we could. And then another example of just blowing the numbers out of the water and past making your budget, but more of just moving it to another universe, was when I worked in the retail group at McKesson. you know, during that time, we brought the team together, we retooled, we really redesigned the whole work process, how we work, our structure changed. We eliminated scads and scads of things we used to do in the past, went from paper world to a digital world. And we grew by, I mean, we went from 1,250 stores to 2,500 stores in 3 years.
Now, that's amazing.
Now, there were some buying of some groups and stuff like that, but we would grow 300 stores organically.
Right. Okay.
In certain years, that's bigger than other chains, most chains in Canada.
Okay.
You know, while bringing in, increasing the profitability exponentially through areas like the way we never made money before, and then achieving employee engagement scores that were 12 points higher than the company. So you think about that. That's not just doing a good job. That's a team that's firing in all cylinders. So we're achieving the numbers, we're doing growth, we're increasing profitability, and everybody's friggin' happy.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. I like it, still blows me away. Okay, so why do you think the atypical are more suited to be able to create and develop high performance teams?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning, is that if you're bound by rules and conformity, by the way we've always done it, it's pretty hard to be a high-performance team. So let's look at the brains. We have the typical brain who is built on basically conformity, based on other things that are more important to them, like political acumen, like talking from a podium, like analytical skills, you know, debate skills, those type of things. And you have the atypical, like myself, who grew up in a world where I could not accomplish things by myself, that I needed other people to succeed. And if you need that over a lifetime, well, you're going to learn that you got to have people trust you. You got to say something. When you say something, you got to do it. And you learn those types. And then it's all the gray stuff. How do people feel? How do people react? Understanding body language. Like when we talked to John a couple of weeks ago, you know, John was an expert at body language. Like I think I am. I can look at people I can understand because I'm looking to start with. When I think the typical executive may not be looking like I am, I understand what's happening. And I'm not letting any, because of that straightforwardness we talked about, I'm not letting anybody escape that room. If I think that they're not understanding or agreeing, I'm going to point them out and say, hey, you don't agree with me. Speak up. You know, it's surprises that kill people. You know, you think you're doing a good job, and somebody comes in and says, well, that's not what I wanted. Well, think about how demotivating. I worked my ass off for you. I'm sure this is what I'm supposed to do, but now it's not what I wanted to do. Well, that's where the skills that I've developed, clarity, simplicity, delegation skills, all those things come to flawless execution. Not by me, by the team, because everybody's clear. And that's the difference between the atypical and the typical brain. And I would say that that's where companies need to change. You need to go and look for people that come from that atypical world who have been forced to. And John's another good example. So John's typical, but John forced himself into working up from the ground floor where he understood the people. He was not afraid to get his fingers dirty, you know, those type of things. And he understood people just as well as I did.
Right. Yeah, he did. Yeah. And I always said I grew, you know, I started from the bottom up too. So makes a huge difference.
It does. It does. Now, does that mean that everyone's got to do that? No, but I think there's a fundamental understanding that if you want to lead people, you need to understand people. You need to have walked in their shoes. You need to have gained humility. Humility is absolutely critical. I mean, you got to be able to be in a meeting and someone says, Rick, you're full of shit, to maybe accept. Now, I might argue that I'm full of shit, but I'll walk away thinking maybe I am full of shit. And I'll come back and, you know, it might take a day or two.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
So that's true. So I think that, you know, and I mean, if every team was a high-performance team, we'd be rocking. And I think that's what we miss. It's, you know, it's one thing to make your numbers. It's another thing to achieve the impossible or have the ability to achieve the impossible or blow the numbers out of the water. And it's creating that type of environment that we've been speaking about for a half hour here that's critical to make that happen.
Exactly. And it is sad that a lot of people are just happy making the status quo and they're not motivated to go above it. So I think it's a fabulous way. yeah, of doing business.
Sure. So as leaders, I think we all have to strive to create the right environment. You know, and that's what leadership is, I really think, is just creating the right conditions for your team to excel.
I agree 100%. 100%, sir.
Yeah, so there's good our podcast. Words of wisdom there, Judy.
Judy all right, Patrudy. I think they were good. Judy Patootie. Oh, Judy my God. Patootie. All right, Mr. Brennan, it's been a good one. Nice chatting with you.
Okay, ciao. Thanks for joining us today and listening to another episode of The Atypical Leader. If you haven't already done so, like, share, and follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. By liking and sharing, you will help other atypicals find all of us, so we can all start to leverage the stories, strategies, and strengths of what make us all unique. Keep listening and remember, take charge and push away those self-doubts. Leverage what we're talking about. Be confident in who you are and proud of what makes you unique. So join me, Rick Brennan, and my co-host Judy Sims on the next episode of The Atypical Leader. And don't forget to get your copy of the book, The Atypical Leader, Harnessing the Power of Neurodiversity on Amazon. To learn more about us, leadership, and neurodiversity, please go to our website, atypicalleader.com.
Thanks for listening. Let's do it again next week.